Word on Today FM.
And it's time now for our movies of the year, and we have brought Roe McDermott and Brian Lloyd together to do this today. You know, I'm not going to try and work back in reverse order because I'm always afraid I won't have time to get to your number ones if we do that. So I'm going to start with your picks of the year. And I'm going to start with you, yours, Ro, because I absolutely loved this movie, The Zone of Interest. I actually thought it was last year's movie, didn't we?
No, did I? Actually, in fairness, yeah, I would have put it in.
It was very start of the year, and I think because it was up for all of the 2024 Oscars, because it came out earlier in the States, this was up there. But it's one of those films I loved, and I will have to wait another 2 years to watch again because it's so harrowing. This is
so moving.
So beautiful. Jonathan Glazer's film at this chilling mediation on the banality of evil about an SS officer, commandant of Auschwitz, and his family who live in this beautiful, picturesque cottage right beside the concentration camps. And I think what is so powerful about this movie is that it doesn't show any of the horrors. It shows people living beside them and living out these lives of luxury. But there's this focus on soundscapes. You can hear screams. There's tufts of smoke, so you can imagine the smell of it. But there's also this obsession with cleaning and this idea of cleaning off sins. There are children who are playing with objects that were taken from people who are in the camps. There are, you know, the wife of this officer uses lipstick that was taken from a coat. It's just all of these tiny moments that build up in this way that is so disconcerting and disquieting and focuses on the horror and how people can live with it. Beautifully conceived, incredibly acted, incredibly disturbing. And again, I saw it and just literally sat for, I think, about 10 minutes and kind of couldn't move. It just washes over you, but just so incredibly powerful. And I think this is really what cinema does best. It makes us think about issues in a new way and does so beautifully and beautifully while capturing the horror of what humanity can do to each other.
I thought it was magnificent. What's your top choice, please, Brian?
Sing Sing.
Remind me what that is.
Yes, so this is that. I kind of like a comedy drama, I nearly kind of say. So it's Colman Domingo plays a long-term inmate in Sing Sing prison, and he's like this very enthusiastic member of a drama group in the prison. And it's really just about these lads putting on a play. It's as simple as that. But what it really kind of does, I think, is get to this idea of how art is not a luxury, but art is actually sustenance for people, and it actually does help to bring out the best in people, whether it be creativity, whether it be craft, whether it be, you know, helping you to process whatever is going on in your life. And, you know, I mean, Colman Domingo and Paul Racy, who people would know kind of more as a character actor, I guess, those are the only two, I would say, quote unquote, professional actors. The rest of the cast are all former inmates of Sing Sing prison and former alumni of this theatre group that the film is based on. But it's brilliant. It's so like charming and funny in parts and humanistic and just, yeah, really, really well shot. It's done in like 32 mil. Like it looks really vivid. Like it looks really, really vivid on screen, because we sort of think of, you know, prison movies of like, you know, Shawshank Redemption or Birdman of Alcatraz or Escape from Alcatraz, and it's all done in a very kind of dour grey kind of thing, but this really like pops with colour. Gorgeous film.
We have a clip from it where Divine G, played by Colman Domingo, explains the value of the prison theatre group in his parole interview.
It's been a program that was established to help the population with management skills, and it's turned into something a bit more, wonderful, because it helps people get more in touch with their feelings and able to process and actually move through and truly get some rehabilitation.
So are you acting at all during this interview?
Absolutely not. I truly hope that you can understand that I've been very sincere. I know how meaningful this is. I would never. Actually, that's not the intention of acting. Acting is just to, you know, process.
I read about the program. It's a good program.
Okay, that sounds very interesting. Your second choice, Ro, is with two of the Irish actors of this era, Paul Mescal and Andrew Scott in All of Us Strangers.
Working with one of my favourite writers, directors, Andrew Haig, who people might know from Weekend or 45 Years, and he's so brilliant at crafting tales that are so human and intimate. And this is about Adam, played by Andrew Scott, who lives in this building that seems to be completely uninhabited and kind of separate from time and other people. And it starts with this otherworldly golden light shining upon him. So it creates a scene of maybe something supernatural or fantastical could happen here. He bumps into Harry, who is kind of slightly volatile but really charming neighbour, and they strike up this beautiful relationship. But Adam is also a struggling screenwriter writing about his family and goes to visit his old family home. And suddenly his family, his parents have reappeared at the age they were when he lost them. And as an adult, gets to have these conversations with them that he never got to have. And it's so beautiful and wrenching. Jamie Bell and Claire Foy play Adam Scott's parents, and it's about what it is like to grow up as a gay man in the 80s, the conversations you never got to have with your parents, or the way you wish they would have gone if they had survived, but also talking about two men who are, you know, slightly different ages, talking about their experiences of being queer and being gay and forging this connection that, again, is just seems completely separate from everyone else. So there's this intense intimacy. I do not understand how Andrew Scott did not have Oscar nominations, BAFTAs thrown at their head. I don't know what happened with the marketing for this movie that it wasn't up for every award going, because it is so beautifully performed. I think two of the strongest performances from Andrew Scott and Paul Mescal that we've seen, and I think that is saying a lot, but really, really beautiful, really gorgeous, stylistically, cinematographically. It is so beautiful to watch. The soundtrack is incredible. Go watch, cry, watch it again.
Okay, you have gone for your second choice, Brian, a blockbuster.
Yeah, Dune Part 2. And I mean, yeah, it is a blockbuster, but I have to say, this is one of the brainiest, most, I think, emotionally, politically in-depth blockbusters that have been in a while. It's really just a film about colonialism and the idea of, like, how, you know, even if it is done, power is wrenched in the most you know, idealistic ways, it is still power, and that is still going to corrupt no matter what. But yeah, it looks incredible. Denis Villeneuve has managed to kind of create this very otherworldly but then strangely realistic world. Like, if you watch it in a cinema, like, there's a real sense of depth to it. Like, you can actually feel that the buildings are there, that the explosions look real. Hans Zimmer's soundtrack kind of borrows a lot from prog rock, you know, has kind of Pink Floyd influences. Stellan Skarsgård was brilliant as Baron Harkonnen, Austin Butler as well as Fade Rotha. For someone who read the book as a pimply-faced teenager, to see it turned into a film like this is something incredible. And to see it done faithfully, but done in a way that isn't slavish to it, that it did adapt certain elements of it. It's a film that you can pick over and analyse and talk about, or you can just watch it for the big explosion and the big performances.
I think the sandworm riding scene is one of the best action scenes that I have seen in many, many years.
Yeah, and the sound design as well. See it in a cinema and the whole cinema vibrates, you know? Mm.
Your third choice, Ro, is one of my favourites from the year. Emma Stone was just brilliant in Poor Things. Okay. What a hilarious movie as well, albeit not for some of the more sensitive people.
Yeah, and Tony McNamara, who wrote it, wrote The Great, and if people are familiar with that, it's, it kind of has a similar ilk of a lot of swearing, a lot of sex, but this is...
The Great is also a terrific movie.
It was so fun, so much fun. And so this is about Bella Baxter, played by Emma Stone, who's a young woman brought to life by this mad scientist, Godwin, Dr. God, essentially. Godwin Baxter, played by William Defoe, and initially we meet...
Whose accent is all over the shop.
All over the shop.
It's Ireland, Irish in parts, but
Scottish,
you don't know what part
German,
it's going to be, yeah.
But this is, it's a fantastical world, and it's kind of this Frankenstein remix story. And so initially we meet Bella, and she has the body of a woman but the brain of a toddler, and she embarks on this journey of self-discovery and sexual liberation, and she's navigating this world of eccentric characters and absurd situations, and also navigating a lot of men who would prefer her to remain kind of intellectually inferior to them. And when she starts having desires of her own and ambitions of her own and thoughts of her own, they get very uncomfortable with it. So it's her navigating this patriarchal world world. But the film is also such a visual feast. The cinematography by Robbie Ryan, beautiful, and explodes into colour as we see Bella like experience the world and have her own thoughts. But Emma Stone's performance, she's dealing with a dialect that is interesting. She kind of has this, Bella has this really interesting rhythmic way of talking, but the physicality of a woman learning to use her body while not being beholden to any social mores or social etiquette is hilarious and brilliant and fascinating.
She is a true superstar.
It's incredible. There are dancing scenes in this.
I was going to say, I'm glad you mentioned that, yeah, the dance scene with Mark Ruffalo and...
And Mark Ruffalo's a revelation in it as well.
So fun. I don't think I've seen him have so much fun on screen playing this ridiculous cad. Like, even just the noises he makes are hilarious.
The mustache.
I think there is a little too much gratuitous use of sex as a narrative tool rather than focus on Bella's interior, but I just think it's so much fun. I don't think I've laughed at a film in so long, and beautiful to watch.
Okay. Your fourth choice is Brian's third, but before we actually talk about it, let's hear a clip of an advertisement for the substance which promises to transform people into an enhanced version of themselves.
Have you ever dreamt of a better version of yourself? Younger, more beautiful, more perfect. One single injection unlocks your DNA, starting a new cellular division that will release another version of yourself. This is The Substance.
The Brilliant. Substance. This is so good. It's like one part body horror, one part social satire, one part physical comedy as well. Like, I mean, it's so many things going on. Demi Moore plays this fading star who is about to be fired by the TV production company that she's been working for so many years. Out of desperation, she decides to take this experimental substance, which will literally split her back open. And out comes Margaret Qualley, who is, you know, 20 years younger, more beautiful, more whatever than Demi Moore was. But the thing of it is that after 7 days, she has to go back into this room that she's built into her toilet and then inject herself with this stuff to keep her alive. But of course, as a thing goes along, Margaret Qualley decides, actually, you know what? I don't want to, you know, have to go back and stay for 7 days. I'm just going to keep Demi Moore locked up in my bathroom. And as that happens, Demi Moore's body basically degenerates into this old crone. Yeah, and you're saying that and you're looking like I've got 10 heads, but I'm telling you, when you watch it, it is brilliant. It's angry. It's the ending of it. It's fantastic. It turns into this...
I don't know whether you've given too much of it away for people who haven't seen it, but at the same time, you have to see it. Is it to really see
it? I don't think you have, because I think the power in it is how it operates and how you witness in such an embodied way, both that there are two characters, but also how the body horror has such a message behind it of how we promote ageism, misogyny, how we teach women to hate themselves. And I think there's such social relevance to do with the rise in kind of plastic surgery and all these injectables and the way we hate women aging. And Demi Moore, who is playing a version of herself essentially, because the amount of body shaming ageism she faced and the criticism she got, particularly around the Charlie's Angels Re-Throttle era, where she was criticized constantly. So it's addressing all of these issues, but doing it in a way that the body horror elevates that and heightens that social message in a way that's brilliant.
It's weird when I watch it. I thought all of that when I first watched it, and then I brought my wife to see it, and I was like, "You're gonna love
date
it.
Night movie." Let's go.
No, totally, it was. And she came out and she was like, "Oh no, that film is about Ozempic. It's not about specifically like plastic surgery." She's like, "It's about Ozempic
because that's what I was thinking as you were talking about.
Because like you're injecting yourself, it's disgusting." It's all about like reducing yourself down and then like kind of funneling yourself into this smaller version of yourself that will be more socially acceptable.
I think you could make also the argument that it's about Botox because it's about de-aging and it's about fillers, which are about youth and the perkiness. But I think unfortunately Ozempic and all of these other cosmetic procedures, it's about all of them and how this...
Oh no, Ozempic is not a cosmetic procedure. I am a user of Ozempic for my diabetes. Yes,
for health, absolutely. Yeah. And there are people who it's really important for. Absolutely. I think, unfortunately, in Hollywood,
it's become this thing.
It's become a thing. Yeah. And I've noticed a lot of actresses getting incredibly skinny over a short period of time, and they are not using it for health. It is for...
Yeah, I understand that. Long Legs is your fourth choice.
Yes. This was another horror starring Nicolas Cage and Micah Monroe, set in the 90s. Has a lot of inspiration from Silence of the Lambs. It's directed by Osgood Perkins, who, if you don't know, is the son of Anthony Perkins, Norman Bates from Psycho. Gorgeous, dark, weird, great soundtrack. Really, really unsettling. Nicolas Cage, I think, has never been more scary or more, you know, out there than in this film. And Michael Monroe as well. I mean, she is a brilliant actor. She doesn't get her flowers enough. But yeah, really, really, if you can see this, fantastic.
Okay, you both have the same choice for number five. So I'm going to play a clip from I Saw the TV Glow, in which in this clip, Owen, played by Justice Smith, is haunted by thoughts of his true identity.
I told myself I made the right choice. Maddie's story was insane, and it couldn't be true. But some nights, when I was working late at the movie theater, I found myself wondering, what if she was right? What if she had been telling the truth? What if I really was someone else? Someone beautiful and powerful. Someone buried alive and suffocating to death. Very far away on the other side of a television screen. But I know that's not true. That's just fantasy.
Okay, what's this about?
This is so beautiful. I saw this on a screener watching it at home, and I texted my partner in the middle of it saying, I think I'm watching a new masterpiece. It's queer filmmaker Jane Schoenburn, and it's this incredible film that exists between reality and dreams and nightmares, using 90s nostalgia to capture the struggle of two young students desperately trying to hold themselves together and to survive Don't Ask, Don't Tell America's suburbia. So they become obsessed with this TV show called I Saw the TV Glow, which has touches of Buffy, Goosebumps, Are You Afraid of the Dark? These shows that kind of toyed with darkness and fantasy and introduced teens to the idea of monsters and empowerment. But it's shot in this kind of flared neon where the pauses are long. There are fantastical imagery. It has kind of David Lynch aspects to it. It has this incredible soundscape, and it's really about the struggle of these characters, but it just sinks its teeth into your subconscious, and it often feels like this kind of time warped drug trip, but it's fueled with such intense emotion. It's kind of, it has this hair splintering sound design. It's just, it will get under your skin, it will stay there. It's a quiet little masterpiece.
Okay, number six for you, Brian, is Challengers. That's the tennis movie, isn't
it? That's the tennis movie, yeah, with Zendaya, directed by Luca Guadagnino. Brilliant soundtrack by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. Sexy tennis, brilliant, fantastic, very, very worth watching. It's on Prime Video now, so you can see what everyone was talking about.
And Nora is your number six.
Beautiful. Mikey Madison stars as Annie, a Russian-American escort who navigates her life with resilience and humour. And initially, she's content with kind of transactional relationships in her life until she meets Ivan, who is a charming motormouth son of this Russian oligarch. And they have this whirlwind romance full of extravagant shopping sprees and lavish parties that eventually turns darker, but just beautifully directed, exquisite casting and just so much energy, but also this profound emotion underneath. Just really, really beautiful, brutal, but also filled with so much hope.
You both have Irish movies at number seven, and yours, Brian, Small Things Like These, the Enda Walsh's adaptation of Claire Keegan's small novel with Cillian Murphy in the lead role, is one of those movies I've still been thinking of it weeks after seeing it.
The nearest film I could kind of, in terms of the reaction of it afterwards, was Spotlight. I remember going to the Irish premiere of Spotlight, and I remember everyone at the premiere was just rooted in their seat and like stayed there for like 5 minutes as the credits rolled. Small Things Like This was a similar vibe as well. Just really like dark and disturbing and makes you angry. It makes you kind of think, like, what the hell were people doing in the 80s? But then, of course, like, you realise that, like, the power that the Catholic Church had over society was so all-encompassing that we just couldn't think of anything else, you know? Cillian Murphy gives this really understated performance, but again, it's all about the white of the eyes, and you see the kind of the lines on his face and how much he's kind of shouldering in it as well. Yeah, brilliant film, absolutely worth seeing.
And your choice for number seven is, well, let's just play a little bit of Kneecap, where teacher J.J. O'Doherty, played by DJ Provy, is called in as an Irish translator during police questioning of Liam O'Goyeni, played by Macara.
A way to look for any reference to an Arlo O'Carlion.
Sinanda Trini, can't even tablet like I will too.
What's he saying?
Cruhinisha tuhi.
What?
Cruhinisha giri orta cruhi go, nako perlaugat, isha taikur, tugus cruhia orta, gus hanar hihin. Shushana to Mishiranaga.
Aye. He says he doesn't have to prove that Irish is his only language because absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. It's just a basic principle of modern justice.
He said that.
Yeah. And he says that furthermore, and notwithstanding the aforementioned, he sees no reason to prove that he cannot speak English because he's here asserting his right to speak Irish.
Here, will you not go to resist an arrest?
Just this self-mythologizing, really funny, really kinetic story, a fictionalized version of how Kneecop got together and started playing these embarrassingly small shows. But as their raps about drugs, sex, police, life in Belfast spread, they get this huge following. And it's layered with all this brilliant social commentary about intergenerational trauma, about, you know, ceasefire babies. But it's so much fun and so gleeful. It uses a lot of stylistic tricks, including a Trainspotting style voice. Over some fantastical and surreal sequences evoking the trio's drug-fueled escapades.
The cameo,
which we cannot spoil, but so much fun. VHS-style fast-forwarding. It's just filled with so much energy, so much brilliant music, of course. Just try to keep up with the pop culture references. Kinetic, frenetic, wild.
Okay, that's one I have to watch over Christmas. I also have to watch The Apprentice, which is number 8 on your list.
Yeah.
The Donald Trump movie. Your number 8 is...
Don't forget to remember a beautiful
that?
Irish documentary about Asbestos, the artist, and his mother's experience of Alzheimer's. Beautiful. Go watch, cry, call your mother.
And your number 9 is Housewife of the Year?
Yeah, Housewife of the Year was an Irish documentary about the Housewife of the Year competition.
Oh yeah, the Callor Coles and Gas thing.
Yeah, exactly. But it's brilliant. It's basically just like a social document about like the progress of women in Ireland using the Housewife of the Year competition. Very, very well done. And like it's all former participants and like their lives after it.
I'm over time, but I'm quickly going to mention your number 9 role is also Brian's number 10, Conclave, which I mean to see this weekend.
Some really smart, gripping political drama about the selection process for the next Pope, but brilliantly acted. Ralph Fiennes, John Lithgow, Stanley Tucci, Isabella Rossellini, incredible cast, brilliant.
Okay, and you're also your number 10 role is That They May Face the Rising Sun, which is the adaptation of the John McGaher novel.
So Pat Collins is
that
such
was
a
this
beautiful
year as well.
Director.
Jesus, yes. Yeah.
You should have had that in your top 10.
I know, Jesus, between that and Zone of Interest. Jesus.
Okay.
Thoughtful, beautiful.
Yeah. I have to leave it there. Thank you so much, Brian Lloyd and Roe McDermott. But you will be back with me next Monday, I know, because we're going to go through all the movies to watch at Christmas as well. So we'll talk to you then.
The Last Word on Today FM.